Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
A supportive work environment can help everyone working in schools stay resilient.
Just finding people that can reassure me that I'm doing my best and that there are people out there who understand me and can help me through these situations.
You are not alone.
Leaning on each other, colleagues in education is essential. You have to.
We take care of one another.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. That's cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
Defining Duke, an Xbox podcast, is brought to you by, well, you. If you want to learn how to support the show, go to patreon.com/laststandmedia.
Salutations, everybody. It is Maddie here today, and welcome to another episode of Defining Duke, a Defining Duke pie. Wait. You know what was happening there? You know what I was about to say? Because I said Defining Duke. I was about to say a Defining Duke Xbox podcast. But you know what I meant to say was I was thinking about Defining Duke Ultimate. And I was about to
right.
say
I was getting Duke ready.
Supplement. Yeah. Like supplement. I'm in DDU mode because we're recording outside of our usual time bubble. Like you can probably tell by the lighting in my room, like we're recording out of our usual time bubble. This has a lot of DDU vibes to it. But yet we're sitting down to record one of our holiday episodes for Defining Duke. But for all of you out there, it's just another episode for Defining Duke. So I apologize for the sloppy intro. My head was in a different spot. Anyway,
best of two.
As always, I am joined by Game Pass connoisseur, Lord Cognito. How are you today, sir?
I was feeling ultimate before, but now I'm like, yeah, all right, I got to get back to duking it out.
That's my fault. I was rolling us into one spot, and I had to bring us somewhere else. I apologize.
No, I'm good, man. I'm good. Just that time of year, it's so much going on. Head down, bro. Head down.
Yes,
it's just,
yes, sir.
You know what it is. You know what it is. We in the mix right now. We in the end game.
Yeah, for those who don't know, we're going to do like four podcasts in a row this week. So it's apologies for just being a little scatterbrained here, but good to know that you're ready for ultimate or not. You know that we're always prepared for whatever's coming our way. That's one thing the Dukes are good at. We're always on our toes. And speaking of which, we're doing our tradition every year. We like to sit down, take an honest look at Game Pass. We put our top five lists together individually. We have this year also done a top three worst list, if you will, games that you should probably avoid on Game Pass that we've combined for. And this is, as always, the motto of the episode is the same. Like, we get this question so often: what should I download on Game Pass? I'm a new Xbox owner. What do I go play? And we answer that every week with our Game Pass Pick of the Week section. That's why it exists. It's just so that people have that rotating cycle of a new recommendation, a new thing to try out, a new starting point if you're newly into the console. And so we want to always do this episode because it's a holiday season. It's a good time to, of course, reflect, but also for those who just bought an Xbox, maybe they want to know what they could play during their holiday break. Or, you know, if you're just chilling right now, you want to know a couple of games you should pick up that maybe you slept on. It's been a really busy year in 2023. This is your episode, right? This is what it's all about. So we've done this every year for the last two or three years now. And it's always a lot of fun to learn about each other's lists and go try other games out. As always, almost forgot our intro promo too here. I'm totally in ultimate mode right now. if you're new here, you want to support the show, patreon.com/laststandmedia. You can find us there where you get early ad-free access to Defining Duke. You get Defining Duke Ultimate. Just a lot of good stuff going on over there. We have over 16,000 members, and come be a part of what we're doing here. And if you want to write in like you typically can for the show, obviously, since these are recorded in a bubble, so to say, like Defining Duke's holiday episodes, the next two episodes are going to be in this little bubble. Unfortunately, we won't be able to have your write-ins accounted for, but typically we're having you as big of a part of the show as we are. And so with that, we appreciate you being here. Cog, would you like to kick us off for our top five?
Yeah, man, this was fun. And this was, I love when we do these, but I have to admit, this was a harder list to complete for me.
Yeah, I thought it was going to fly together for me this year. And when I was looking at it, I was like, okay, I got one, two. I don't know about the rest, though. What's going on?
Yeah. And for me, it was like, my mentality was there were a lot of contenders. I want to explain to the realm of the Dukes what my mindset was. There was a lot of contenders, and I was like, how do I parse this? How do I make the separators, right, kind of thing? So we're going to start with number five. This was tough because it came out in April, and technically I'm like, man, I don't know if I should count this, but Kai's got to go with his heart. You know, you got to go with his heart, and you know, this game is weird, it's quirky, and it has some of the most unique combat I experienced in this year. And for the Xbox platform, it was new to them. So for me, it was Ghostwire Tokyo. It came out in April. And at first I was like, wait a minute, am I allowed to? I'm like, yeah, that's right. This was an exclusive at first.
It got dropped in the service this year.
It got dropped in Game Pass.
I will be disclosing, I did bend the rules.
Okay, cool. That's cool.
Yeah. I'll just say that. I want to be clean up front. I bent the rules on one of them, and people will know why.
Cool. Fair. I love it. So for me, I was just like, all right, Cog, why? You know, and it's two things. One, this game really talks about loss in a way. If you play through the story, you know, about Akito, and then I believe the spirit, detective cop spirit that aligns with you is called KK. And these two are the odd couple. They do not really like each other. One is like, brother, you are here. The ghost is like, I am a spirit to take over your body, and you really don't have no say in this matter because I got to do my mission, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it starts off quirky, and again, I will admit, performance maybe not the greatest in the beginning. You're like, you got to get used to this game, you know what I'm saying? So I'll make your little adjustments, put your little V-Sync, put your graphic settings up. But once you settle in, it really tells an amazing story. And one thing I will die on a hill for, some of the interesting side missions I've experienced in a video game this year, and one of the best side missions I've ever played all year is called, like, Save the Children, I believe the name of it. That was when this game opened me up. And Cog's not really the horror kind of game, but it's something about Japanese horror, the way they did it. It is so cool, man. This thing hit really different for me. And I'm not on the emotional side, I had to get all sappy, but you know, I played this game during the worst time of my life. I was literally in the hospital 5 days. ROG Ally finally got a chance to play when I started to get my strength back. So I played a lot of it there, and then I was able to finish it when I got home. And the story kind of resonated with me about loss and recovery and all that kind of stuff. So go check it out, man. Ghostwire Tokyo. I think it's a solid foundation. Can't wait. We assume there's going to be a sequel based on things that we've heard from leaked documents, but I got a ride for Ghostwire. So give it a shot. It is definitely a very unique experience, and you'll be doing hand gestures, shooting out things and fighting demons and doing all type of crazy, swinging from buildings and platforming. Crazy game. Ghostwire Tokyo, y'all.
Yeah, I that's one that I picked up on launch day on my PS5, and then the review cycle chewed me up, and I just never got to it. What did you think of the combat? Because that's the thing that interested me the most is, like you mentioned, the hand movement, hand signs, and like that just spoke to my Naruto side. I love that show, so it's like, you know, I always love the jutsus and whatnot. So is it as good as it looks? I know it's visually satisfying. Like there's one where they take out almost this string and he just like twirls his finger around it and pulls. And I know you play it on Xbox, but like the reason I want to play it on PlayStation is that DualSense. Like that seems like a DualSense kind of game. That was my mindset. I was like, yo, if they give you feedback when he's like pulling that back, that's gotta feel pretty satisfying. So like, what was the combat like? What was the AI like? Was it satisfying? Was it, because I remember at launch some people were like a little mixed on it.
You know, it's great because once you get to the rhythm of the game, you know, the cool thing is any spirit that you, first of all, you have like your fire, your water, your different types of jutsus or whatever you call them, right? Yeah. The cool thing is, you know, there's ones that you hold down, like I believe in, with the fire, and then he can kind of do almost like a flamethrower effect. The cool thing is when enemies, multiple enemies rush you, the dope thing is when you hold, I believe it's LB, you put your arms up in a block, right? Mm-hmm. Then you can get into a parrying, if perfect parry kind of timing, where the game rewards you with those type of blocks and then gives you extra magical energy to fight back. The most satisfying thing is what you said. So you'll weaken enemies and it'll expose like this little core inside their kind of, you know, ethereal being. Mm-hmm. Then when you see that core, you have, based on your skill tree, what you have the option to manually go into it and then rip them out physically, like almost like a punch and then pull out. Or you can, if they, because basically they're like in almost like in a Mortal Kombat day state sometimes when their core is exposed. Mm. So it's now you have this, you have a business decision. If you have enough time, because when you do the yank out with the string, right, that takes a couple of seconds. You can get hit from other enemies. Mm. So what you got to do is, all right, clear a couple, these two are stunned, because if you don't, they will recover a little bit and start coming back at you. Mm. You know what I mean? So it's this really interesting push-pull dynamic, and it's so satisfying to rip out the cores of these enemies. And the boss fights are unique as hell. Very trippy, cool stuff, man. Ghostwire 2, from a combat alone, strength of the game.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. And the thing that really was underrated was actually the platforming, because the game is very, very vertical and wants you to get up high and then you could kind of glide. There's really no fall damage. You could like glide down off of buildings and stuff like that. In a lot of collectibles and stuff on top of skyscrapers. And it's just a cool game, man. And shout out to the Torii Gates. The Torii Gates, these little kind of like dojo like gates that when you see those, you in that area, it's on. It is on. You are going to face some crazy stuff, but it's really cool. Again, a story about loss and souls that have been taken in this city who are trying to just find their way back. And you hear them talk while you're in the city, you know, like an old lady. Oh, I thought I left my keys here. You're in her apartment. Like you just hear these really cool emotional touches about it. It's a unique game. I've never really played anything like it.
It's a good selection. I didn't expect that. It was a really good one. Yeah, you've talked about it a lot this year. So there's COGS number 5. So
a supportive work environment can help everyone working in schools stay resilient.
Just finding people that can reassure me that I'm doing my best and that there are people out there who understand me and can help me through these situations.
You are not alone.
Leaning on each other, colleagues in education is essential. You have to.
We take care of one another.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. That's cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
For me at number 5, Sea of Stars. I had to give some retro love, of course, on this list. And this was a last minute day one Game Pass edition in August. And I'm happy they got it, because this is a retro style RPG, very much inspired by the likes of Chrono Trigger, where like every battle takes place in the overworld. There's no real transition screen or random encounters, which I know some people are like mixed on. Like, I'm okay with random encounters personally, but like this game, it's very healing is what I define it as. So you have these two main characters, like Valir and Zale, and they, you know, you can pick who to play as, one or the other. I chose Valir. I just liked her design and everything. I thought she looked really cool. And everyone, it's kind of Paper Mario-like, too, in its combat. Like, every character has their own unique little gimmick in combat. Like, for example, Valir can, like, throw out a moon, and you kind of, like, play ping pong back and forth and, like, time hitting the A button. You just keep quickly bouncing it back, and, like, you'll do more and more damage, but you got to be, like, on your shit. So it's one of those games where you have to, like, to maximize the damage output. Like,
you have to mainly
press some buttons. So I think for those who are looking for, like, a turn-based game that's very interactive in its combat, like, you're going to get that here. The way revivals are handled, I think, is one of the least tedious, least traditional ways a JRPG has really done it, where like you get downed and like you can pick someone up for a turn and like spend items otherwise to get, like, get even more healing. So and if they're down for three turns, they get back up automatically. So you don't need to necessarily spend that turn to heal. It's like, oh, he's down. He's got three turns to get back up. And then I could focus on healing these two. The trick is that if he goes down again, like he's down for more turns. And so it's kind of like that domino effect of he's going to get back up or she's going to get back up. But like, I got to make sure that when they get up, that they're not going down again, because then it's going to really be long term punishment. And then I'm going to have to spend a turn to heal them. So some of these boss fights are really like chess, really deeply engrossing. You know, the character designs are great. The story is, you know, to me, a little simple. Like when I think of Sabotage, mm-hmm. like I'd say if I had like a critique of the game, like Sabotage, mm-hmm. I thought was extremely witty in how they wrote the messenger. I thought that was one of the funniest games I played. Man, like I love that. And maybe it's my fault for what I went in expecting, but like Sea of Stars isn't written in that way at all, might I add. And they share mm-hmm. worlds where I thought like, okay, there's going to be a little bit of tonal overlap. Mm-hmm. But there's really not. And and so like it's very much like a great JRPG for those who love the classics, but it's also like if you're trying to introduce someone to JRPGs, this is a good starting point, because like that kind of hero's tale approach, they take the hero's journey here. Like, you know, you're trying to basically like, you have the power of like Zale has like the sun power, Valir has the moon power. And they're using this to fight like the evil alchemist, who's, you know, the big bad. And yeah, it's kind of like classical tale, if you will. But if you've not experienced any of that before, this series is a great way to start out. And I mean, it's popular for a reason. Like it did really well for a reason. There's a hunger for these games. And like, if, you know, Xbox doesn't have a ton of these types of games in the service. So for me, I was like, you know, I preached the good word about like Octopath or Sea of Stars and so on and so forth. I'm like, you know what? I got to make sure I'm repping a game that like represents a lot of my tastes. And it's like, hey, give this a try, like fall in love with this art style. It's beautiful. It's cozy. The music here is fantastic as well. I believe I got to double check. It was either the co-composer of Chrono Trigger. Hold on. I'll double check here. But Sea of Stars is really good. And I just think that a lot of people need to get around to trying it on the Xbox platform. Yasunori Mitsuda, who helped compose Chrono Trigger. So mm-hmm. yeah, like really, really good name to have as part of your game. Sea of Stars, number nice. 5. Really like the game a lot.
I love it. I love it. I was like, this got to be on it, or honorable mention from one of us. Absolutely. I love that choice. Like, yeah, good one, man. This one was pretty obvious for most that's listened to the Dukes. You know, Cog, I love artsy fartsy. I love it. I love, you know, independent developer games sometimes where this is the one I kind of, when I first saw it, I was like, I think this is going to be good. And I was right. Like, mm-hmm. they nailed it. And I shout out to Planet Alana. It was a fun
ride. See, I knew you'd have us on the indie reps, because I don't have really many at all. outside of Sea of Stars, like, that was it. Like, yeah, I know you're going to have a lot.
Yeah, well, this was coming to an end. The indies are probably going to come to an end after this. But, but look, I just got to be real, you know, man, the story of this girl, Lana, and Mui in this planet, and how it starts off, very, very cool little voice. It's not voice acting, but sound cues and stuff like that, that I thought was really cool, that told a lot of emotionality to the world that you're in, how things are going. And it was, this thing really got heart. Felt. That's what threw me, because I knew it was going to be atmospheric. I knew it was going to be your typical kind of side scroller, maybe a little bit of inside vibes, a little bit of another world vibes. I got that coming in. But where it really surprised me was, one, the mechanics, and then two, when they introduced that new character, that your new companion friend, Mui. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I really liked is the very unique ways they get you to use this little thing so that it could get to areas where you can't, and then you could help it advance across the level. The biomes were very diverse. The puzzles were great and fair. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's only some games where you go like, bruh, this is ridiculous. Like, come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, this feels cheap, or you're just trying to act like you're so smart with this puzzle. And it's like, this is really not a good puzzle. You know what I'm saying? So this one, it introduces mechanics slowly to you. You get more acquainted. But towards the end, I knew the game had me because something happens and you get split for a while and you feel it. And I'm just like, oh, man. Then when you reunite and you go, oh, no, like it can't go down like this. And the connection just builds. And I love when, again, I'm not spoiling, but when you get to the end, the reward really felt worth it. So yeah, Planet of Lana, check that out. It's I believe it, who is the studio? The developer was Wishfully, I believe. Check them out. It was a wonderful surprise. I played it earlier a year before, had my eye on it, and it over delivered. So yeah, Planet of Lana was my joint.
Yeah, this is a good one because I remember you really being caught off guard by it, but I think your praise of the puzzles is like what captivates me the most, because I remember like what you were talking about with Cocoon, where yeah, it's just this very Inception like universe where it sounds like it would be overly confusing, and I don't mind solving a good puzzle, but the satisfaction of a puzzle is like that eventual overcoming of it in a timely manner, and that's really tough to balance. So are you saying, like, did you ever get stuck in Planet of Lana?
There was maybe like, Let's say the game had 30 puzzles. If I'm just throwing out a random number, I would say two I didn't get. But what it was because I was like, so stupid. I didn't. They showed me just enough of something, and I didn't pay attention to it. But the cool thing was just like, I didn't feel cheap. One thing about puzzle games, sometimes I feel the developers try to be too smart for their own good. Right. And they, you know, try to make it seem like overly complex, or I hate when they just, it's a complete mechanic that is new that you've never encountered. And you're like, oh, I didn't even know I could do that. You know what I'm saying? Kind of thing. So those are the ones that get me, man. Cocoon, I had a little issue with you on a couple of those with you. But Planet of Lana never felt that way. Like I always felt, even when the few times I didn't get it, I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. I should have saw that one. When I did go look, I'm like, all right, I got to go look because I'm stuck. Like this is crazy. But it didn't happen too often because a lot of them I thought were really fair and really well done.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that because, yeah, that can be a big turnoff for me is I don't mind the puzzle. But, yeah, just when you get stomped out, I'm like, this is such a pace killer. And especially when you're talking about, like, the story being so good.
Oh, like, so good. So and there's a – and that's the thing. Remember when I gave Somerville praise, the last thing I said about Lana is the cool thing of these type of indie games is that I do like when they – even though there's no verbal story, there's no written narrative, right – I love when the game is trying to attempt to convey to you what is happening in this world with these characters and this alien force that's here and stuff like that. And this did it. And it even did it through what I would consider like, not hieroglyphics, but paintings and stuff showing like the history. It's just really cool done, man. Like some really unique stuff. And it's an amazing game. They got introduced some cool mechanics too that I don't want to spoil too, involving lighting and stuff that is very tastefully done. It's a beautiful game. Absolutely beautiful game.
I got a beautiful game in turn for you.
What you got?
One that I've preached about quite often here, and it may indicate a certain part of our other list. Number four goes to Dishonored. Yeah, so when I was going through the Xbox app and Game Pass and revising everything that's been added and subtracted this year, I was thinking to myself, what did I enjoy most on Game Pass? And I was thinking during that stretch of Redfall where I was so disgusted, I went back and did a full playthrough of Dishonored Definitive Edition. And I was like, that was one of my favorite experiences of the year, man. And like, that's a game that I've just preached to people endlessly, like, you gotta try Dishonored. And you know, especially like this video is going out after the Game Awards, but as we record it, it's before the Game Awards happen. So we, at this moment in time, we don't know for sure what Arkane is doing next, but the rumor was that it was like a Another, I don't want to say just in case it doesn't happen, right? Yeah, that would be pretty bad. But anyway, point being is we know that they're cooking on something here. And I don't know how I'll feel about it in this moment here, but like when it comes to classic Arcane and what I love about them, Dishonored embodies all that. Like if you know Maddie's taste when it comes to, let's go to Bethesda Game Studios, right? Bethesda Game Studios is a team that I think thrives on the first person immersive interaction. Like you can just like pick things up and every object has purpose beyond just environmental clutter. It's all interactable. And while for a lot of people, that's very surface level, that's everything to me. Now where Dishonored takes it a step forward is like all of those pieces you're picking up are like ways to explore the environment. Like you find this whale oil tank, you pick it up, and you put it inside this slot here, and like now this force field's powered. Now if a guard walks through it, he's going to evaporate. Granted, that's going to move me up to high chaos because now I'm killing people sloppily. I think the morality of the game, the way you play, is truly reflected in the story and the reactions to the characters around you and the way the world changes. I think of when you go to Dunwall for the first time, it's clearly not that great. And when it's really disease ridden, if you like are going high chaos, like the enemies you encounter are all fucked up. Like it's just awesome. It's one of my favorite games just because of, you know, you play this one game for the first half, making a ton of choices. And the second half, you just feel all of that. And it has immense replayability because of it, but it's not overbearing. Like Dishonored is a 9-hour game. Like that's about the amount of time. Granted, I've played this game like 5 times ish, like, you know, under the 10 in that limit, right? When it came out on 360, I know I played it at least 3 times, and then Definitive Edition, so yeah, like 5, 6, 7, somewhere in that range. And it's granted my play clock may be a little bit lower because of that, but it really is a game that's not a massive commitment. And because of that choice, because of the supernatural abilities and the customization of your play style and how you can't see or do everything in one playthrough, like Dishonored is this, it just walks the line beautifully of like choice and consequence from RPGs at the same time as like being this immersive stealth game. And I just feel a lot of this industry has lost their connection with a good stealth game. I feel like nowadays stealth is this option in an otherwise action adventure package. And it's usually like you're crawling through the brush and that somehow the enemy can't see you, even though like you're blatantly sticking out in this bush. Like it's very gamified. I like how Dishonored's like you're up on lampposts, like you're tucked into the shadows of an alley, like you're peeking around corners, you're teleporting, stabbing them and grabbing their body and teleporting back, like that type of stealth, just man, it is special. And so in a year where Redfall came out and disappointed many of us, I encourage people to reconnect with what makes Arcane special. And that's the first Dishonored. And that'll be just, you know, I'm just pushing the ball down the hill and the momentum's going to do its thing. And you're going to go to Dishonored 2. You're going to go to Prey and you're going to get it. Like these games are fantastic. I didn't want to cheat and throw all these on the list, but yeah, it's like the Arcane special is here in full effect. So yeah, I picked Dishonored for number 4, just because I thought, you know, this is one of my favorite Game Pass experiences of the year. Like it was in response to something else, but it really reminded me, it grounded me in a situation where I was really losing my shit. So yeah, Dishonored.
Salute to you for that, because of you, again, as a person who's completely new to Arcane, and you know, Redfall would have been my first, and God, I mean, once Maddie's like, bro, you got to play Dishonored. You need to see what's going on. And I'm like, and it was so quickly discovered. I'm like, yo, they made this? Like, this is crazy. Yeah, it holds up. So, good choice. I understand the cheat on this. I understand it.
Bro, I had to do that. It. I apologize to the audience. No, I know that. You've heard it before, but, you know, it's got to be done. It's got to be done in very unique situations like this. Yeah,
you had to educate us. Yeah, I'm so glad I learned that lesson. I needed to learn. So for me, we're up to number 3 now, right? So then we're number 3. All right. So this one, Cog's going to break a rule, but a different rule. I hate these games. I'm going to be 100% with y'all. These type of games are not for COG. Everybody in their mother is COG. You got to at least try it. You got to at least play it. You got to at least. And I'm like, no, that's for y'all. I don't do this. But this one co-host of mine kept going on and on and on about this game. So I'm like, okay, let me try Lies of P.
Oh, wow. What's going on here?
Just try it, Con. Give it a few hours, Con. Just see.
When did this happen? Oh, this, man.
I snuck this under the rug. I didn't tell you.
Couldn't give me the W too soon.
So first thing off the bat, you know, COG, again, I do not like Souls games. It's just not my DNA. I don't like to beat my head against the wall. It's just not where I'm at in my gamer elderly self. I'll call myself, you know, I'm old, the skills, and I don't like being mad. That's my thing. I don't like playing a game and got to, but I will say this game is, first of all, the atmosphere is outstanding. You know, the whole idea of puppets and things on the loose, and you know, your Geppetto's son, the Lies of P, you know, Pinocchio, and okay, Pinocchio story. Okay, so I'm getting into it. You know, the first thing I noticed off the back, you know, is your play style. I went for the whole balance to get the critical spot kind of play style. And it was kind of like a fencing. Your man was getting a little fencing on and the back that. And I'm like, oh, you move nimbly. You're not super slow plotting, because that's the other thing about these Souls games. Yeah, exactly. Then I was like, oh, you got to run. You could run button. The focus, the control was tight. I was like, okay, I like this. Then I'm like, left bumper. You could hold block, but you could block and move. Yeah. Wow. From software. Like I like that. You could, it's actually a little modern where I don't feel like I'm in molasses every 5 minutes. I can roll around, I could circle around, I could throw objects at it. Then for me, what really was cool was while I'm going through the mechanics of just playing, you know, I start to see the durability thing. I'm like, oh, okay, they got the little durability. All right, you got to pay attention. Don't let your stuff. Bro, when you figure out the grinder thing, and then it's like the way it's done, and it's just like you're forging and sharpening your weapon. And I thought that was cool. The enemies are unique. The way they look, they actually give a little tension. They give you a little tension when they get up on you. And the coolest thing about this world is the sound design and the atmosphere. It really feels like a downtrodden situation. And you are trying to, make sense of humanity and some other things without spoiling too much. But I thought it was well done. I didn't get mad far in it, so I'm not going to cap like whatever. But as a person looking at my list, it was sacrilegious to leave this game off my list, because I'm like, this is actually a Souls game I would continue to rock on. And I'm like, I get
that
it.
That means a lot coming from you.
For me,
this is the man, ladies and gentlemen, who played like, what, an hour of Elden Ring? that's a lot coming from you. Sorry, go on.
This blows Elden Ring away. I don't care what Elden Ring's talking about for me. Listen, I know they're like, you probably don't think. The few hours I played, the dodge, the power, the way the bosses are done so cinematically intense, it felt fair. I didn't feel like it was like super ridiculous. And I was like, all right, not about the difficulty. I just felt the control, the atmosphere, and the graphical fidelity of this game then took it to the next level. So yeah, Lies of P, very well done. Well done. For a person who does not like Souls game, I was like, all right, this is something, if I really love the genre game, and I would stick in all the way through. It's just that I had to give you a shot just to see, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nah, for sure. I have to add this.
They're going to get you one of these days. That's kind of
But here's the thing. I will say, like, this is almost feel like I was cheating. I was getting away with this being a Game Pass launch game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, a day and date Game Pass launch game like this, of this quality, and especially for guys who are Bloodborne guys, and like, this is something. So if you're a Souls guy, I had to add this to my list. You have to play this game. Beautiful game.
100%. Love it. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Thank you for trying it. I'm acting like I fucking developed the game. Thank you for playing, dog.
Thanks for playing. Send a message back to the team.
I'll let him know what you thought. All right, for me and my top three, this is one that I got to be honest, when I was putting together my list, I was like, wow, you know, I kind of let this one come and go. And I'm disappointed in myself that I did, because I really like this game a lot. It didn't end up cracking my top 10 of the year, but I think any other year it 100% would have. This was a game that was announced to be coming day one to Game Pass during last year's showcase. And I was like, oh, this feels like a message being sent. Like, they're going to do day one for this. Okay, let's see. Is this quality concerns? Woe Long Fallen Dynasty. Wow. I mean, this is a game that, look, I know it's a weird take for many. I don't think Sekiro is a bad game by any stretch. It's phenomenal. And I'm not just saying that to appease. I know it's incredible. I just never connected with that game. And I'm going to give it a second chance at some stretch, because I think maybe now I just, something will click more. Maybe I'm coping by saying that. Mm-hmm. But what I love about the FromSoft games, or now like Lies of P, I love build tinkering. I love that these games are as boss intensive and difficult as they are crunchy numbers. And I feel like Sekiro, one of the main reasons it didn't click for me, it wasn't me like, oh, you got to fit my taste. It's just, I'm not looking for a pure action game from software. Like, I didn't really play Armored Core. I didn't really play and get into Sekiro. I played Sekiro. I got past Kenichiro and I was like, nah, I'm just not feeling this. It's not about the mechanics. It's about like a combination of the mechanics and also like I'm fine tuning, I'm tweaking different armor, different resistances. And so I say all that to say that Woe Long Fallen Dynasty was kind of the Sekiro I wanted. Like, okay, we have this focus on deflecting. We have this focus on timing, parrying, but it's also an RPG. You're like leveling up, you're unlocking new abilities. And I got to say, I just like how Team Ninja makes their Souls-likes. You know, I know for some it's kind of contentious, but Nioh 2 is one of my favorite Souls-likes. I love the compartmentalized maps. I love how they just create this world map and they're like, okay, you're going to go all over the place here. And instead of one big connected world, they're just levels that are interconnected instead. And so I love that because it adds replayability, secret missions in there. Some of these boss fights are so tough, which I also love, like Lubu, that man is coming for you. I'm telling y'all, like, he was getting a reputation early in the year. That's why I say it's a shame that this conversation for the game didn't carry on much after the first month of launch, because Lubu is one of the best boss fights in a Souls-like. I mean, that shit was awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. That alone is worth it. He is the hardest boss in the game. And it's like, once you clear him, I think until the final boss, like, you're not going to have too much of a problem with Woe Long. But yeah, this game's also fantastic, not just for those who are looking for that like Sekiro RPG. But again, I'm talking about time a lot because I feel like with so many good games, like, time is arguably the most important resource here this year. Is like, we have tons of good options. It's about like, where do you want to spend your time? And when you have a game like Woe Long, which I want to say like barely pushed past 20 hours, and I did all of the side missions and all of the main missions, I was like, wow, that's great. That's a great feeling. Like, it was just very fine tuned, great combat, great build crafting. And like, we're on to the next one. And as someone who grew up with Dynasty Warriors, you know, like, that was one of my favorite series growing up in the Musou games. Like, as a kid, these were awesome. They still are awesome. I don't love them as much anymore. It's more like the random guilty pleasure. But dude, Woe Long, like, taking those characters that I know they're from like the, you know, important parts of like Chinese history, but like for me, is like, that was my introduction to them through Dynasty Warriors, these larger life characters, and now making them into like Souls like characters and having them like fight with you against bosses, I think it's awesome, man. I really did enjoy Woe Long Fallen Dynasty, and it's one to not be missed. I know you can play this in co-op, which is something that I recommend for those of you who maybe aren't too, I remember recommending it to you, Kyle, because I was like, hey, if you're not crazy into Souls-like, you don't got that weird hookup system in, that with the, you know, the dial up over.
Oh, yeah, dial up.
Yeah, like where you write someone's name on the ground and just wait and hope they connect.
You can send a raven. Send a raven.
You can just invite them into your game. And so, yeah, Wolong is great for those who maybe are a little unsure. I'm pretty sure after the first major boss fight, the full game is co-op. So yeah, if you're hesitant, get a buddy involved. Both of you get Game Pass, download this one. It's a really good time, and I think you'll have a lot of good memories with it, because it's like, especially if it's like your first FromSoft game, like just a lot of cool stuff there, like doing that Lubu fight together with a buddy.
Bro, I heard that name, and that name was ringing bell in the streets. Let me tell you, when I'm on the phone with Attic, like a lot of times he plays and talks to me at the same time. And for weeks, all I kept hearing was this Lubu, man. Oh my God. Like this, like, bro, he was being terrible. My poor boy's getting terrorized by this.
Yep.
I was like, he's that crazy? He was like, Cog, you don't understand what is going on right now. Yep. And I remember hearing the elation when he finally was able to do that. But I'm so glad you added Molar, because I was like, it wasn't going to be on my list, because y'all know Cog hates Souls. I did my charity.
Yeah, you
already did your part. I had to pick one. But I was like, yo, it felt bad. I was like, oh, you ain't gonna put Wolong. So I'm glad you got Wolong on it, because it needs to be there.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So that's number three for me.
All right, so now we're getting down to the top two. Man, this is fairly obvious. But look, this game broke a long-standing bias I had against this genre. And this is a person who, outside of one or two types of these games, I really don't play the rhythm game thing. I don't really do rhythm like that. Like a game where the whole thing is kind of, you're encapsulated with rhythm. So I thought I was giving it away
before dancing. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about?
Okay, I thought I was giving it away. Yeah, I got it. Sorry, look, y'all know what it is, man. Chai and 808 come to the front of the congregation. You guys stealth dropped your way into my heart this year. It was the superlatives. I cannot say enough. First, you know, the art style, we know this thing looks like it's straight off of anime. It looks like a straight up cartoon while you're playing it. Standouts for me was once getting the rhythm of the game. I like that when you get into that flow and the game, it makes sound effects to kind of encourage you, and it's just like, hey, you know what I'm saying? Like kind of thing. You're like, all right. And you know what I'm saying? Some of the best music I've heard in a game. Just the music is rocking to the, I remember this, I think it was like level 2. And I'm like, yo, what is this? While I'm playing and jamming out and seeing this, that's what I noticed. The stage is rocking to the beat of the music and everything is aligned and in tune. And this is a vibrant world. Some of the coolest boss fights, I will say my standout would be the Corsica fight was one. Where it's pretty much head to head.
You're going to learn during that fight.
You're going to learn some mechanics. And the way this game tries to do it is just so damn cool. My personal favorite that I don't think gets a lot of credit, because the game has so many cool moments and bosses, but the Rokor fight took it to the next level for me. Mm. For me, someone you encounter that you think, oh, you think he's soft? Or you think, okay, we're going to teach you. And not only is it done so well, when that Wolfgang Beethoven joint hit.
Oh, yeah.
Bro, I was like, oh, I'm going to beat him. This right here is fire. Like, the game has so many moments. And like, the story's cool. A lot of goosebumps. A lot of moments where you just like, wow, that was really cool. You get the feels of the character. They have a mascot right now with Chai 808. Like, they actually have something. I love actually the tagging in of other characters the assist characters, so to speak, that you bring in. I thought that was cool. This game, they did it, man. If you would have told me Nintendo made this or someone else made this, I would believe it. I am shocked this came from Tango. That's why I had to give them they love this year. Sure. Yeah, you know, if we ever do like a, maybe one time we may need to do like a Dukes or a DDU or something, or a Duke in reference to, you know, studios of the year from Xbox Game Studios, where we rank them or something, do something like that. Tango got to get their flowers, bro. They had a, to me, they had a really strong year. And this this made me look at John Johannes and that whole squad in a different light. The fact that they were able to green like this, co-sign this, this was the game, man. Hi-Fi Rush, absolutely stunning and an amazing experience.
Yeah, one of my favorites of the year. I love that game a lot, especially because it's like playing a Saturday morning cartoon, but it's also like very heartwarming by the end when you like watch like Chai and Peppermint, like their relationship develops, and Corsica like joining the team. Yes. And I'm forgetting the name of, I think Cinnamon was the other one. Like he,
I believe so. Yeah, the guy
who like writes expressions on his face.
Oh, that hilarious.
I love him, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah, that game is, and there's nothing that we can overstate more than like the surprise that when we first saw that game during Developer Direct. I don't know if you had the same feeling, but like, I was like, oh, this is going to be like a 2-hour game that they're kind of just dropping in. Like, no way they just stealth drop a full game. And when I was like 10 hours deep going, wow, they like just straight up released this, huh? That's intense, man. Mm-hmm. What a risk and how it paid off. Like, you just can't help it. Like, that's definitely a big part of the drive of this game is knowing the beginning of its story, but also just how much quality is there from square one, like, you know, down to the MP3 player right in the chest. Yeah, just what, and you know what it is? It reminds me of a game it reminds me of how games used to be made, right? Like, it was open enough where you could go off the beaten path and explore, find a few collectibles, but it was pretty linear. And it reminded me a lot in design of like Devil May Cry. I was like, this is like a very cartoony Devil May Cry. I was like, that's like, this is such a risky game. Like, we just don't get these types of games nowadays. So yeah, just like as time goes on, my heart grows fonder for Hi-Fi Rush. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah. What you got?
All right. Number two for me. I don't think my top two will end up surprising anybody, but
agreed.
But I, this one came to Game Pass a little late, but I was slandering. I was on my slander swagger for this one, man. I was really giving this game a tough time heading into launch, not very accepting of any decisions the developer was making, not feeling confident. And this was the most wrong I think I've been since Ghost of Tsushima, because when that came around, I was like, oh, it just kind of looks like Ubisoft game, doesn't look bad. And then it ends up being one of my favorite PlayStation exclusives ever. I got to talk about Dead Space Remake for a moment here. Yeah, I got to talk about this one, because it's like, got a buddy to play it just last week as we record this. And he went and immediately hopped into the second one and replayed that. And just watching and re-experiencing these games for, you know, the dozenth time, you know, this is my favorite survival horror game ever. I love the original Dead Space. And I always tell people that, like, my symbol of love is that as a scaredy cat, you know, very easy target with these horror games. I like how you feel about FromSoft games. Like, I don't like to be mad. It's like, I don't like to be scared. I don't like to be sitting in my own home uncomfortable. I don't like that feeling. But Dead Space, I'm willing to go through it. I'm always willing to go through it for Dead Space. I remember when I first picked up that game on 360, like, I always had to play during the day, well-lit room, like, you know, no headphones on, like, don't worry, mom and dad are out in the living room, like, nothing's going to get you. Like, I was mentally preparing for my sessions for Dead Space. Like, it was an experience, right? As a young adult now, like, you know, okay, I know what to expect. This game had so many tricks up its sleeve that gently alter what it once was, but in a way that makes it so much better. For Dead Space Remake, I love that there are like little choices along the way. Like, oh, you can turn off the lights to gain oxygen in this room, but like now you're wandering in the dark where necromorphs can hop out anywhere. And that's scary. The game has this satisfying exploration loop of like, to go get the best thing that you probably want, you have to go through something pretty scary. And so it's this continuous loop of like, oh, the lights are off, or oh, all the windows just shuttered out of nowhere. And like, oh, there's a million necromorphs coming at me. But at the end of all of this, is like my next weapon or an energy node or something like our power node. Sorry, something to upgrade me in a meaningful way. And it's got one of the best new game pluses. I replayed this game three times this year, which I know isn't saying much. This is a pretty short game, you know, again, like 9 hours, give or take. But like, you all know me, like I'm the reviewer where I'm just like, all right, great. That was awesome. Let's let that experience marinate on to the next one. But like, no, I came back to this game 3 times because it's so good. I had to get all the endings, all the achievements. Like I love Dead Space Remake. I really do. And when it got added to Game Pass, you know, this is one that if you slept on it earlier in the year, it is not one of those remakes where it's like it's faithful. But like even the story, you know, that's the thing. That was the thing when we were going into the launch, you'll remember, Cog, like
I remember
you're voicing Isaac. And I was like, OK, Isaac is voiced in Dead Space 2 and 3. And those games are story wise built around him being voiced. Dead Space 1 is built around him not being voiced. So like its audio design was impeccable. Like you'd hear the whispers in Isaac's head and like you could see he was gradually losing his mind as like his breathing rate picked up more and more. And that stuff added an immense amount of like tension to the game, for me at least. An absolute treat on the audio front. My worry in a year in 2023 where AAA main protagonists are abysmal. I'm talking about Atomic Heart. I'm talking about Forspoken. Long list, man. I could go on. But like so many intolerable MCs, and I'm like, dude, Isaac cannot be like the necromorphs right behind me, isn't it? Like, you can't do this to my man. And they handled it with complete care. Like, he talks only when needed. They get the things right. Like, you know, they have Gunnar Clark back for Gunnar Wright back for like the voice work. Good choice, right? Feels natural, feels right. And like the yells when he stomps out necromorphs, they're like, yeah, like, oh man. But then how it builds his relationship in meaningful ways with his crewmates who were once just like really like, Isaac, go do this. Isaac, go do that. It's not that anymore. It's something much, much more. And also his relationship with Nicole, the whole reason he's here has all been elevated now. Where even slight changes to the ending, like Dead Space Remake is the best way to play this game. And I never thought, but I believed Dead Space 1 was perfect. I really did. I was like, you don't need to change a thing. Like, you can make it look better, but I mean, it's back compatible. What do you got to do? I mean, look, it just shows that there's always room, especially on a technical level. This is, as Cog would say, a looker, but like, especially lighting wise, like there's this one scene where like the fans are spinning. And the light is coming through that side into your room, and you'll see like the light literally rotating and kind of just like clipping little bits of light into the room. It's just, you'll see like the dust in that light. Just,
oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, man. Like every scene is carefully crafted and absolutely beautiful. Where I love this game. I really do. You know, it would have been like, and when I was making my top 5 game of the year list, I was like, this would be really, really high for me if like it wasn't, I put in quotes, just a remake. But like, to in a year where I feel very robbed of remakes or remasters of my favorite things, like, you know, KOTOR, for example, just being dead in the ground. It felt really good to get something I care about that I was nervous about done so well that I actually preferred over the original. That's rare. I don't think it's going to happen often, but I'm happy that like, because like most times it's like, I don't have a ton of nostalgia for Resident Evil 4, right?
Right.
Resi 4 is a game I played for the first time in like 2021. Like I was late to that game. So when the remake came around, I was like, okay, cool. Like most remakes that come around, I'm like, okay, cool. But this one was special. I was like, this is a game I care about a lot. And so, yeah, to be sitting here on the other end of it going like, this is amazing. Like this is a 3-time playthrough for me. This is a game I remember so well. That moment of like reviewing it, imagine me just in this little bubble, the relief I was personally experiencing. I was like chapter 6. I was like, this is fucking incredible. Like, this is so good. Man, I could go on, but yeah, Dead Space Remake, easy number 2 for me. I really do appreciate this game a lot.
Fantastic. I remember so many episodes of Defining Duke with this
so
man.
Many, bro. I gotta cut that out.
Bro, he was like, yo, not this team. I don't know, Cog. They can't.
They made the Battlefront 2 campaign and squadrons. Like, I don't know what people expect from me. I'm just like, nothing about that track record was convincing for the best horror game of all time, in my opinion. Sorry, go on.
You were so, you know, on it. Like, man, like they and then I remember when we got the news about yo, he's got a voice. Oh, I don't know, Cog, like this. Like you were in it. So to see them execute one of your favorite games of all time and nail it to the point where you like it better than the original, I'm proud of you. Like, that is a big, they knocked your socks off, man. That's huge. And I was happy that it landed that way for you.
Oh, it landed all right.
Yeah, so now we're
at the number one, sir.
Come on, man. It's not too difficult for those who know.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I think I already know.
You know what it is. But the thing for me, before we reveal, is that, look, no game is perfect. You know, no game, everything has their flaws. But if you want Western RPG sensibilities, if you want cool NASA punk sci-fi aesthetic, if you want Bethesda's best main line story campaign out of all their games, I'm talking to you, Thriller, Skyrim, aka, you know, the greatest people's considered to go. I get it, but you don't got a better mainline quest than this guy. I just gotta keep it real. Now, you can say everything else about Skyrim is better. That's cool. And the reason why is this game added tension to me. It added companions that I personally cared about. You know what I mean? Implementations that exceeded games that I liked, like Outer Worlds. And I'm not going to go too crazy because I'm a Mass Effect guy, but I did care about these companions, right? So Starfield. It did it for me. And the thing about it is, let's just say you know, do the campaign or whatever, that's fine. But some really cool faction quests. We cannot disrespect these faction quests. You know, we have episodes that we've talked about in SpoilerCast in depth. Yes. But some of the most coolest implemented faction quests, some very unique side quests that to this day, not even all of us have experienced. And I thought that's amazing. Again, do you want to say, hey, they went too wide? That's fair. You want to say that that's too much? You didn't care about that. But if you just say, okay, you know what? I'm going to take this like an old school Bethesda game, and I'm just going to beeline campaign, or I'm just going to beeline faction quest. The enjoyment that I had this year, I still play this game. That's how much I love it. So I can only talk about from my experience. And yeah, I think that it's one of the best, because you just mentioned New Game Plus, and it's one of the best implementations and unique implementations I've seen of that thing. Because I'm not a New Game Plus guy, I'll be honest. Normal games, when I beat them, I'm kind of done. Like, I don't, there's no need.
Yeah.
Starfield was not that for me. And the way they applied it, okay, cool. After you beat it, you have the ability to start right at this point, and you have the ability to reveal certain things or not. And based on if you do that, oh boy, it's a whole different experience. And then because the game is so wide, it allowed me to say, you know what? I'm going to do things I didn't even do the first time just to see how these systems interact and how it works. So cool. And then the last thing is, you know, you just want to buy some cool ass ships flying in space and get your Star Trek Enterprise on with a crew and just hire people and some of the best ship combat that you going to play in a video game. This is it for me, bro. So Starfield, man, I really can't wait to see what they do more with it. As far as, you know, anyone is that loves RPGs. And again, put it this way. I love RPGs. You're like, man, I only got time for one thing this year. You can thoroughly dive yourself into this game and not have to worry about anything else taking your time. If you just got time for one, you can make time for Starfield. So that's where I'm at, Starfield. Bethesda, really loved it. Can't wait to see what they do with Shattered Space and everything else they got going on, and hopefully address any other, you know, feedback that they've been taking from the team. So that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, man. You know, for me, my favorite thing about Starfield, it's not in my top. When I did my top five or top 10 games of the year list, it made number six for me. Like it was definitely one of my favorites of the year for sure. Although I haven't seen the response. This is, you know, I'll be away from YouTube at the time, but I'm sure there will be more conversation about the fact that like a Bethesda Game Studios game didn't crack my top five. But what I love about the game so much is that every time I fire it up, I have like a fun thing to do. I like the side quests for me in particular. We talked a lot about that. I think of like the Juno's Gambit one. I think of the clone one I told you about, where you find like leaders from human history. I don't know if you ended up doing that.
I never even encountered that.
Like that's the thing. And it's the only game this year where I feel personally like every time I talk to someone about it, like it's the definition of like we had different experiences. Not only maybe choices we made in the quests and how they turned out, but like things we discovered, like everyone on the Defining Duke side of LSM, like, you know, Gene, you, myself, Rand, like everyone's put over 100 hours in the Starfield. The fact that we've sat down collectively twice for over an hour, and each time we're like talking about stuff that we've all never seen. Everyone had that moment. That is why I love Starfield, because there's always something to discover. And for, as you mentioned, all its flaws, it's so densely packed. There's always something interesting around the corner that it I don't know, man. Like it's like I can't help but love it. I can't, like, even if like my Bethesda Game Studios DNA is like, I want better exploration. Like I want to be on the ground more and I want to go from point A to point B and find something meaningful in between. I want less procedural. Like I know my complaints about the game and I think they're all fair, but man, there's something captivating about it too. Like I love playing Starfield, like, because I just know every time I fire it up, one quest is going to lead me to like five more, and it's just, it takes you away. It completely absorbs you. And you're right. Like if you got time for one game and that's it, Starfield's a pretty good candidate, because that will take up all of your time if you let it.
Agree. And I think the thing that really surprised me more that I didn't think I was going to enjoy was just the base level combat and playing a Bethesda game in third person. I don't really do that. I always
play the whole thing in third,
bro. The minute I was able to switch to third, I couldn't stop, because with the boost pack, that platforming, it turned it into another game for me. So I really got into it, man. And the tension of the combat, from especially like wild, crazy creatures and, you know, terramorphs and all type of, you know what I'm saying? There's things to get down and you gotta be, you know, you in the mix. So I was surprised at the gunplay and the uniqueness of that. Really impressed me. But yeah, salute to them. Salute to Starfield. Go check it out. See what you think. You're wrapping down to the Christmas tree and you see if there's a little series, little man there, a little Series X, and you're like, all right, got Game Pass, y'all. You know, you listen to the episode, you know, give it a shot, man. Make the decision for yourself. And again, it's all personal, but I really, really think if people give it a shot, they will enjoy this game. And most people do.
So for number one for me, it was originally my game of the year. Let's get into it, man. We already talked about it a little bit. Liza P. It kind of stayed quiet during your section just because, yeah, like for me, like this is my favorite Game Pass game of the year for sure. And I was very excited when they announced it was coming day one to Game Pass. But you want to talk about a game that completely swept me off my feet. You know, at first it started off as like this Bloodborne love affair, like, you know, you're kind of playing around From Software and Sony, like, we, you know, this is like widely desired, like the internet would explode if you announced this thing. And we got this guy over here in Liza P. Pinocchio's kind of giving me a little bit of those vibes. Stop playing around, like, I'm gonna go fuck around with this, right? So, you know, I download it on like a whim. I'm just like, all right, let's give Liza P a shot. And there's this, like I say, like, and I've said this for no other Bethesda game studios game, or, but this is like a step out moment in this game where you enter the city of Krot and it's really two moments. Oh, there's beautiful. The first one where you step out of the train and the lights are flickering, dead bodies on the floor, blood streaks everywhere. Like, that environmental design will forever be pasted in my head. I was like, that was an immensely beautiful yet terrifying introduction to this world. Yes. Like, you just step into the mess. And then you go out into the city, and it's like this beautiful gothic architecture.
Yes.
There's, again, it's chaos like everywhere. Piece. Dead animals, dead humans, dead puppets. I'm just like, holy shit, like, what happened here? And that is the driving force of this whole game, is like, this world is so captivating and you just want to know what happened. Why did the puppets behave this way? Why are they killing everyone? And like, that through line is what drives from like this game to a level above From Software in many ways, because From Software has been constantly given the excuse. And I'm not singing this tune for the first time now. I have said this for years, that From Software needs to figure out their storytelling to get to the next level. They have mastered gameplay. We all know that. But to get to the next level, they need to stop with the obscure, page 6 of this pill gives us a connection to this boss fight over here, and letting insanely talented YouTubers solve it for them. It's interesting. It's cool. It's fun piecing it together. And some would argue that's good storytelling. We've had these debates on Defining Duke before. I respect it. I get it. But to me, Lies of P manages to have that elusiveness while still telling a great story. They never directly talk at you. It's more like orienting you toward the objective, and you don't have the answers, and you naturally, organically find them yourself. And I just think that is the game's biggest strength, is like, P is a character. He doesn't speak one time, but he's one of my favorite characters of the year because of how they build him up, who he is, his past, why he's here. Because you start off the game and literally, like, you're deactivated in a chair. It's like, don't forget that. It's like, why are you like this? And the game just aims to answer all of these questions and finishes up on my favorite ending probably since, like, Nier Automata, Bioshock Infinite. Like, it's up there. Like, that is, people know. For me, like, those are some of the best endings in video games. Persona 5 Royal as well. Like, it's in that company of, like, this left a lasting impact on me on a thematic level. But also, when it comes to the future, it was like that credits tease that, like, when you leave the theater and you're both looking at your friends like, yo, like, they're doing that. That's a rare feeling in games today. Especially in today's spoiler-ridden culture, nothing is safe, nothing is kept secret. That is such a rare feeling that I'll always hold on to. That Lies of P gave me that feeling of, like, once I rolled the crest, I'm like, no way, man. Like, smile on my face of, like, not feeling cheated as if there was more left on the table, but just, this was a very complete experience, and to know what's coming next, give me that all day. I see the vision. I am behind you 100%. Especially with this coming from a team. This is like, they helped with, I think, Black Desert Online. This is really their first full game. Bro, Ji-Won Choi, director of this game, rookie of the year. Salute this man.
Salute
this man. The fact that they are making it their first game ever, really, a competitor to one of the most talented developers. And all people had to say about this game was, man, it's just a copycat. Hell no. Educate yourself. Hell no. This game is special, dude. This game is special, not only because of the story, but I think the combat's great too. You talked a bit about it, Cog, so I don't want to get too redundant here, but me, it's that melding of the Sekiro and Bloodborne mechanics. Like, you have the blocking from Dark Souls, but the deflecting of Sekiro, if you time the block right, and then the getting around, dodging, like, you know, of Bloodborne. And when you get hit, going at your enemy to recover your health. The incredible weapons and style of Bloodborne. Then they have their own new layers of, like, fable arts, where you can, like, attach, like, a string to an enemy and do this, like, AOT level cut down on them. There's just so many things to this game that make it reminiscent of what I adore, but also feeling brand new. The story feels new. The extra layers to combat feel new. There's so much about this game that feels new. The quartz system feels new. You know, as you get these quartz, you're going to lodge them in and get these really meaningful upgrades to your characters that you can feel. It is a wonderful game. And there's even this weapon. I'll tell y'all, I'll just give you a name. It's called The Golden Lie. And the way you unlock The Golden Lie is one of the fucking coolest things in gaming. I'll just say that. Look it up if you have played it and you don't know. And last but not least, the vinyls. The vinyls that you unlock that are just mere side content. Oh, wow. I mean, that this is some of the most beautiful music this year. And it's just sitting there waiting to be missed. It's incredible. This is an incredible video game. And I've naturally gone on and on about Lies of P and how great it is. But yeah, I'm in the middle of my second playthrough now. Absolutely adoring this game. I will admit Baldur's Gate 3 kind of hijacked the replay of Lies of P. That's why it's my game of the year. But Lies of P is a special game. It's like, it really, this year when it came to my game of the year, it's like a 1A, 1B situation. Like,
yeah,
I can't just like say like, oh man, Baldur's Gate, full clear. Like, these games are both doing something so special. So like, if you will, Lies of P, kind of my game of the year. So this was a really easy selection for me. Like, you know, if you're not into FromSoft games, there's a summoning system. So you can kind of like, you know, dip your feet into the pool, get past that very, very tough first boss fight. And then you'll have your companion there to help you all the way. And so you can do that if you need. And upgrade them and get little there's again other mechanics attached to the companions you get in this game. So it's just, it's fantastic. It really is. It's art. It is beautiful. And I adore Lies of P. So it is my number one Game Pass game of the year.
Love it. Love to hear, man. Look, this thing got me to play. You know what I'm saying? Like, Souls, and I don't play the, that's why I knew this was special. And it was because of you. It was because of you. The way you talked about it, I was like, yo, let me give it a shot. And yeah, it definitely nailed it. And I was like, yeah, this is something special. I cannot deny that. So to hear you go all the way with it and say that it exceeded expectation. And the key is what you said, the story, the fact that it has that, like, it's a narrative and it makes sense and it's cool. And that whole world, that time, it's just, it's great choice. Love the choice. Love the choice. So yeah, so where are we at now? We've completed our five great picks. What are we doing now?
Now we just need to let the audience know, like, hey, all right, you got a lot of suggestions under your belt. Game Pass is very tantalizing in that you'll scroll your way down. You might see a cool little thumbnail and go, hey, that looks interesting. We just wanted to give you three games that maybe right now you'll want to avoid. We don't know where they'll end up as some of these games are currently being updated, but just three games that came out this year to Game Pass that we thought you shouldn't be spending your time on. And so we did a collective list for this one, as in it's not like Cog's list and Maddie's list. It's like we talked about it. These are the three we came down to. Good news, by the way. We had a tough time this year. We had a really tough time. We were actually very close to doing a top two and going, all right, let's just tell people like, hey, man, like, these are just two games that you should avoid otherwise. But this has been a great year for Game Pass. But we found that third. And Cog, if you'd like to get us started, because you are the one who played this.
Yeah. So this one was tough for me because I came in with a lot of expectation, you know, for this one. And again, as a guy that loves the indie scene and a lot of, you know, unique art style and direction, I had high hopes for this. And Benedict Fox, man, Last Tale of Benedict Fox, it just didn't land for me. And I felt like what they were attempting to do, kind of Metroidvania, cool aesthetic, cool story, seemed okay. But the execution, it just didn't come together. And the control issues started to rear its head. And I was just like, man, it just, again, not that it's the worst thing I've ever played, but for the hype that came into this game, this was supposed to be one of those ones. And I just felt they missed the target there. So yeah, Benedict Fox, man, you got to bring it to the congregation. Just not on Cog's list there for, you know, ones that I thought was really going to land much heavier.
Yeah, this one, I remember there was a lot of excitement for you. And at first when you were playing it, you were kind of up on it. But like now it's just like, it just shows its flaws pretty quickly afterwards. And it's just downhill from there, which is a shame because stylistically, like it looks like it's got, like, it looked like they had them.
Yeah, they definitely did. I remember seeing the trails. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. When they first announced it. But yeah, it just didn't all come together for me.
So for number two, I recently played this one. I know Cog, you played a little bit before its release. and it drove me to the game that came up before it instead. Payday 3. This one just, yeah. By the way, came in way after the server problems. Just tried to fire it up. And it just feels like it's missing everything that made Payday 2 really great. And I'm not talking just about, like, of course there's going to be less content by default. Payday 2 has been supported for an absurd amount of time. But Payday 3 feels like a dead man walking right now. And what we've learned with this service genre, like, I think we said the same thing about Halo Infinite. Like, you know, these games are really never down until they're truly down and dead in the ground. But it feels that way with Payday 3, like, just dead right out the gate. Not a lot of players, so like long queue times. But when it comes to the gunplay, definitely improved. But like the way heists go, the coordination, the map structure, and especially, man, the unlock cadence afterwards. I'm like, what are we doing here? Like the it's something with that Gene and I have talked about a lot, is that we have a lot of developers in our industry that you can't help but assume there's some sort of ego attached to the idea of like, we got to be different. We got to do something different from last time. Like, there's no understanding of like the blueprints there. We have a massive fan base that for this like 2009 video game that still has over 40,000 concurrent players regularly, that we just need to, you know, do that again on newer technology. And somehow we just go left and lose the whole spirit of the game, to the point where, you know, Payday 3 had like barely over 1,000 players last I looked on Steam. Wow. I mean, it's probably a little bit higher on Xbox, but because of Game Pass. But then you look at how successful Payday 2 is on Steam, and it's just, it's incredible to me, like, just how much they blew this. And this was one of those games that I gotta say, coming into launch, I felt kind of bullish about it. I'm like, this makes so much sense for Game Pass. I was like, this is, oh, yeah. I remember saying before, like, I was wrong. I was like, yeah, this is going to be one of the bigger games for Game Pass, because again, I pardon me for assuming, like, you got the formula there, Payday 2 pretty proven. And I feel like the track record's there. And if they had to move on, they had to have felt like that we got something here. But it kind of felt like that initial Destiny 2 moving on, where people were kind of going, why did we make this sequel? Or Overwatch 2, like, why did we make this sequel? Yeah, and same thing with Payday 3. So it can turn it around. I have faith that just given the amount of support Payday 2 got, that they'll turn around Payday 3, but it's going to take some time and a lot of effort, because right now, like, if you fire a Payday 2, which is like $2, so it's a really easy sell. Dozens of maps, dozens of missions, really cool tie-ins. Like, you'll have like Giancarlo Esposito like giving you the brief on one of your missions. Just really cool fun ones. There's a goat simulator mission. Like, it's just a game rich with content. So Payday 3 has a very big uphill battle, and it may even be out of Game Pass by the time it gets fixed and is actually worth playing. But just this time around, I don't, as much as I thought this would be an easy slam dunk.
Yeah.
It was a pretty tremendous miss. So yeah, Payday 3, easy top two.
Yeah. I mean, I remember playing. I'm like, man, the premise is cool. I remember the announcement. We're like, yo, this makes sense. But yeah, and then talk about the issues that it had. Oh boy, the launch issues were rough, you know, kind of thing. So yeah, I feel you on that. And it goes to show the community still playing the other one. But I think the last one, I think this is a consensus pick for both of us. We are uniquely tied to this title because of, you know, being able to the chance to preview it earlier and stuff like that. So the hopes of the premise was really intense. And it was, a new IP from Arkane. And we were all excited to see what the potential of Redfall was. And, you know, for me, the thing that really bothered me the most was just that playing the console version of this game from a technical level just was really surprising. So that was the first thing. The second thing, and I think me and you both mentioned this immediately upon playing it, is when we see that they did not put in the effort from the narrative standpoint. When we booted up and we see in the stills and the slideshow type story conveying energy. Mm. And I'm like, oh no, we ain't even got the budget really. Not budget, but we ain't really invest into this world. the way we thought it would be. So that was the warning sign upon getting like the finished thing. But yeah, look, AI was just god awful. We just got to call it what it is. You know, it was just a mess. It felt Frankenstein-y put together on some levels. Some things were really cool with the vampires, but it just, the AI and stuff was just so bad and inconsistent, and the way it played, it didn't feel good, you know? And it just, yeah, it snowballed, you know, to the point where I'm just like, man, what happened? What happened? And obviously we know the history, we know the story. We're not going to beat that to death ad nauseum as far as where the studio was at. But yeah, it was disappointment because we thought this had a lot of promise. We thought if we looked at Xbox year, this is the only thing you got to be like, yeah, this is a stain, y'all. This was really not good. So yeah, you know, I know obviously since then there's been a 60 frames per second and a couple little updates here with the AI and stuff like that. And you know, kudos to the team for at least trying to weather it out. But when you make that bad an impression starting off, could not recommend this game at all. So yeah, Redfall. That was that.
Yeah, this was a tough one because not in the decision. It was an easy decision.
Easy decision.
This is a tough one in that when you learn the story about this game and how it was made and how much talent was lost in it, it made way more sense because like why it came out the way it did. Because I remember during my review, I was like, my big question, I said like 5-6 times, was like, what happened? Like, I didn't expect greatness here because I knew I was kind of gun shy about it since I first saw it, but I was not expecting something this bad. And when you learn the story of how, like, because they were making multiplayer and live service, they lost all the talent that made Arcane, and it was felt throughout the game, like even the level design was just not that good. I was like, man, like, what the fuck happened here? You know, this is why Dishonored made my top games of the year list for the Game Pass, and this is why Redfall is where it is, because this is this is the lowest rated Xbox first party studio game in I think almost ever, and this is a sign of something that can never happen again. A game can never launch in this condition. Doesn't mean every game has to be perfect, but I think even the Redfall apologists need to understand, like, this is a game that just, it's unacceptable that Xbox would ever have released this game in this state. And they were definitely in between a rock and a hard place, right? We've talked about extensively. You cancel the game. Yo, they cancel a brand new Arcane IP. And let's not pretend that would have had as much consequence online.
Good point.
Absolutely. Like, you know, you would have heard a lot of people going, I thought Redfall was cool. 2020 hindsight, but like, yeah, that would have been a whole other problem. So this game was kind of in that weird pocket where I think it just had to come out, and Xbox, maybe, even though they've admitted they just didn't pay attention to the game, I think they had to play ignorant to a degree, right? Because they're just like, look, man, this game ain't looking like it. So Redfall is a game that is not indicative of anything that makes Arcane one of my favorite game studios. And that's a heartbreaking one, because as a content creator, like, obviously viewership is everything. And you try to balance that, like, your take versus, you know, like, viewership, and you just try to stay true to yourself and hope people show up. And it's upsetting that, like, my most popular Arcane video, like, I've made dozens of videos on this company, is me just fucking crapping on Redfall. In a sense, good, right? I'm glad people are aware. I'm glad people caught it. But I more so mean that, like, I have celebrated this team for so long, and it felt like no one cared about how good they were, but they cared about how bad they became. And that's sad, because this is like one of the best studios in gaming, and to watch them just like that, really heartbreaking, really like one of the most sad game launches I've seen in a while, because it was also not like a Cyberpunk where when it came out, this is a game that, you know, we went, you know what? They just hang with it for like even a couple of years. Like, they got something here. Like, Cyberpunk, even in its most broken state, you saw there was a great main story, right? There was this interesting world to explore. Like, the gunplay could have been great, like, et cetera, et cetera. With Redfall, you might have, like, above average gameplay in the gunplay department, and that might be it. You have vampires, which is a rare trait in games, and that might be it. But, like, it just feels it never took full advantage of anything it was given. And, again, really, really sad to see. And especially when you mix that in with us kind of being lied to with what happened the during situation. The preview session with the build versus what we played. It was like, this feels like a sliver was very optimized versus what we were handed. And that also rubbed us the wrong way. It's like, look, man, like, we're here to do a job, and I get you need, you know, positive coverage or whatever. And we didn't really, like, I know me and Sav were, and you were very critical coming out of our preview. It wasn't like we were sunshine and rainbows, but we definitely felt like this is going to be a train wreck. I know all of us didn't walk out thinking like, this is going to be fucking definitely terrible. And so for a company to kind of make us and many other creators and journalists out to be fools, was really disappointing to see, like really disappointing behavior. And so I hope that that's the last of that, because certainly there were some who got like really, I think, trigger happy. Like I think VGC, or I shouldn't label outlets because I'm not 100% sure, but someone of a big outlet was like, Arcane's back in their best way yet. I'm like, okay, chill the fuck out. Like there is no way you're walking away thinking that from the Redfall preview. But we definitely didn't walk away expecting a train wreck. So there's also that part. It's like, this was, the marketing was disingenuous. The conversations between, you know, what we got in preview and in full release, just completely different shell of itself. So yeah, just really disappointing launch from start to finish.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, the hope now is that, you know, this was, again, a decision as far as launching and greenlighting before, you know, the acquisition and stuff. And now that it's there, I think the beauty of the situation is that it is actually a learning experience that they realize can never happen again. And especially between Xbox and Bethesda themselves. And when you acquire someone, even if they had a project before, you know, how is it handled? How is it received? Internal reviews, and then actually coming in for triage earlier in the pipeline versus later in the pipeline, when maybe there was a kind of call for help internally that, you know, they weren't really happy with where things were going. And obviously we heard the reports and stuff, but I'm pulling for Arcane. You know, I want to be positive about it. I'm pulling for them. You know, the studio has tremendous history. I'm glad you made me play this on it, because it really helped cleanse and say, oh, okay, this is what this studio is really about and known for. And I'm excited for the future, man. We get to see what they got potentially coming up. And I think they will bounce back, and I think they'll be fine. But this was definitely an industry learning experience.
It's tough to imagine Austin bounces back really strong. I hope they do. But Lyon is a company that, at least currently as of recording this, I have a lot of faith in, even after Deathloop, absolutely. Because at least Deathloop had the DNA of previous Arcane games. Like, I thought it was definitely like the most disappointing, but I thought it was definitely like at least elements were there that made their game special. So definitely hoping that this is a learning experience that they just all bounce back from, and that Arcane Austin, given the situation they were in and that Xbox not really helping them out, has earned themselves a nice check to kind of be like, I'm sorry check. Like, hey, we got you this time. If you fuck this up, you're probably out of here. But like, we got you this time. So pressure's on for them for sure. Because when that booty said, like, we're not looking to shut them down right now, I'm like, right now? So yeah, they're kind of fingers over the big red button for Arcane Austin. And so they gotta nail it their next game for sure.
Yeah, they gotta nail it. And my hope, I'll end with this, is that Harvey, the legend, you know what I'm saying? I got a chance to interview him, gets a chance to do a vision under now Xbox Game Studios, you know, banner, and to see what that is from start to finish in fairness to them. You know what I mean? I would love to see that. And hopefully Booty and the team, they give those guys, you know, an opportunity, because I want Austin to land on their feet. I don't want to see any studio shut down.
Absolutely. So Cog, top five list done, top three list done. Good job. We did it.
Yeah, we did it, man. Nice little beefy episode. And I like the choices. I like the diversity of our lineups. Normally, we have a lot of crossover, and I like that. You know, all right, we're on this side of the fence and stuff. That's cool. I like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you tuning in. We hope you're having a great holiday break. I'm sure Cog and I are right now. We're just chilling, our feet up on the couch probably somewhere. So we hope you're enjoying as we're away, and we're looking forward to getting back to all of you. And with that, Cog, hashtag this week. I mean, we might as well do it, right?
No, we don't. Yeah, what are we doing? What are we doing? What's that? I feel like it's obvious for you and I'm blanking.
Maybe top five, right?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
So let us know, ladies and gentlemen. I'm at G27 Status on Twitter. Cog is at Lord Cognito. You can tag us there. Use the hashtag DDTop5. Let us know your thoughts on the episode, what your favorite Game Pass game of the year was. We'd love to hear from you. If you don't use social media, cool with us. Use the comment section down below. You're all able to do that, right? Hashtag DDTop5. Let us know your thoughts. Looking forward to hearing them. With that, take excellent care of yourselves, and we'll catch you next time for, I don't know what episode number is going to be. I think episode 156, I'm going to guess, of the Finding Duke and Xbox podcast. Shoot from the hip here, but nonetheless, we'll see you next time around. Peace out.
The Finding Duke and Xbox podcast is a product and trademark of Last Stand Media and Collins Last Stand LLC, and is recorded from the United States of America. The show is conceived by Matthew Mr. Matty Plays Schroeder and me, Colin Moriarty, and is written and produced by Matthew Schroeder. Maddie's co-host is Barry Lord Cognito Eversley. Defining Duke's executive producer is Dustin Furman, and the show is edited by associate producer Ben Smith. All of Last Stand's theme music is by Ramon Narvaez. As you know, all of Last Stand Media's shows, including Defining Duke, are fan-funded on Patreon at patreon.com/laststandmedia. The following names are at the producer support level on Patreon, and we're thankful for your kindness and generosity. William Holbert, Ross Marenka, Miguel A. Brewer, Morgan Ashley, Azan, Michael Vecchio, SL the FMA, Daniel Diamore, Brad Cooley, Jeremy Key, Patrick Leslie, Malachi Wall, Dave Cowell, Donald John Vader, Stephen Innerfield, Kyle Johnson, Enucleator, Daniel Beresford, Brian Williamson, Jorge Padua, Vance Cody, Rallo, Mr. Ayub, Casey Raymond, Denny Sniperteeth, Extian, Magic Marker 215, Adam Tabiat, Jordan Vallett, Ross R. Lowe, Kevin Hawley, Hugo Della Gia, Austin Lipka, Paul Warren, Harold Eustache, Will Williams, Dino's Roar, Nichols Renaud, Shane Breck, Sean Llewellyn, Michael Mash Potato, Sweaty Magic, Nate Izod, Hargeet Chani, Ellis, Albion, Josh Sullinger, Andrew Roman, Jacob Donovan, Dark Archer SC, My Name is Mayo, Jason R. Zahn, Sean Hatfield, Christopher Knock, Ryan Daly, Grayson Maxwell, Cody Woodall, Steve Stompy, Sword of Serious Gaming, Mark Arnold, Whiskey Sin, Zia Parrix, Sean Miles, Relentless Rex, Alan Tuniak, Dustin Klingman, Christian R., Jad Rita, Patrick Skipper, Jacob Hancock, Luke Aldersley, Dustin Graff, Zach Cohen, Peyton Stone, Fozzie Bear, Michael Buffel, Dan Root, Asak Paredes, Talisman, Christopher Morgan, Randall Hulsey, Dio or Die, T-Bone 007, Josh Godfrey, Kalike Souza, Betty Ann Moriarty, Travis, Joe, Ross Chandler, H-Trons, Antonio C., Ryan, Jay Getter, Bjorn Campbell, Theo, Jeff Mercado, Gregory Slavinsky, Jordan Gale, Of Fortuna, John Zile, Boots, Tyler Brown, Megadeth, Poot, Gavin Newland, Alex Lapeer, Saul Balcazar, Raul Melendez, Matt Flowers, Kinnums, Joseph Baker, Kendrick Caius, Jimmy Rodriguez, Rockin' Ace, Dave Alvarez, Will Hernandez, Chris Galvin, Adam Hall, Mason Kadalak, Ollie Fritz, Anthony Marola, Sagib Alam, Kyle Hagel, Colin Love, Daryl E. Naiman, Toby Ryland, Stewie 108, Andy Miller, Patrick Montgomery, Richter 86, Derek Wechter, Barrett Boswell, Christopher DeVayo, Chris Morton, Joel Holcomb, Johnny Waffles, Roto 24, Jonathan Coates, Logan Sharp, Sean Mason, Josh Gravlik, Jordan Town, Brian Chand, Organic Produce, Carlos Algarit, Mike Menzel, Richard Hebert III, Miranda Grubba, Juice, Martin Beck, Jerome Ferreira, Joey Andrzejczyk, Nathan R., Joe McPartland, Gary Cavallo, Christopher Moore, Jacob Bell, Dennis Usel, Lou and Ray Loper, Jonathan Cortez, John Schultz, Tom Quinn, Anton K., Alan Trembley, Ryan T. Mandel, Pork and Beans, Jean-Francois Forzi, Tony Zuniga, Robbie Hensley, Shane Miller, Alex Cabrera, Corey Dustin, Hugo's Desk, Peter Reynolds, Anthony Vasquez, Adam Kinniston, William O'Carroll, Bo, Jorge Pal, Cannonball Jones, Thomas Sablin, Phil Crone, Throw 7, Adam Nix, Josh McKinney, Michael Gates, Alexander Scott Gates, Ryan Robertson, Sean Chandler, Lockmore, Gio Corsi, Joey Gontaliger, Alex Monez, Gerald Pennington, Justin Payne, Justin Wagaman, Austin Riley, Paul Joyce, Alan Hopkins, Chad Lewis, Enrique Perez, Joshua Smallwood, Shane Rayum, Don Lee, John Cordero, Ashley Carlson, Marius Garson Peterson, Tyler Harris, Kyle Martin, Madmock Media, Bull Burkholz, and Jonathan Rice.
A lot is being asked of people working in schools.
Teachers have more and more things to do.
The shortage of teachers right now, having to fill a lot of holes and wear a lot of hats, it's very difficult.
There are steps you can take to manage stressful times, whether in the classroom or outside of work.
For me personally, I can disconnect by just being outside.
Laughing works a lot.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
Teachers, administrators, and other school staff play an important role.
Education can be a shining light, and it's really the equalizer for everybody.
You are making a difference in people's lives, including your students.
You can have a really bad day at school and still realize that what you're doing is making a bigger difference.
We are the best profession in the world next to doctors, but even a doctor had a teacher.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. Teachers, administrators, and other school staff play an important role.
Education can be a shining light, and it's really the equalizer for everybody.
You are making a difference in people's lives, including your students.
You can have a really bad day at school and still realize that what you're doing is making a bigger difference.
We are the best profession in the world next to doctors, but even a doctor had a teacher.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.